And we have come to the subject, how to recognize true spiritual consolation. Again, it was necessary to retape because of surface noise. And again, we have the substitute voice of Robert Warnock. How to recognize true spiritual consolation. We'll notice the word true is inserted there because if there is one device of the evil spirit which is characteristic of the devil, it is to simulate spiritual consolation. So let us first define our terms. Spiritual consolation is a spiritual joy that God confers on those who are faithful in doing His will. Spiritual consolation is a supernatural joy that God confers on those who are faithful in doing His will. It is the happiness experienced by a person who is doing the will of God. You will notice we say it is a supernatural joy. There is a natural satisfaction that accompanies the exercise of any of the human faculties. But we can't expect in the order of grace to have a supernatural satisfaction in properly exercising the supernatural faculties. Some people like to play tennis. They'll play tennis for 6-7 hours a day. They enjoy it. Some people like to think. There is a joy experienced in using the mind. Some people like to eat. There is satisfaction experienced. Oh, I'm not quite sure what human faculty is exercised in eating. The accompaniment of satisfaction in the exercise of the faculty is part of the universal human experience. What we are talking about is that God confers corresponding satisfaction in the exercise of the supernatural faculties, basically those of faith, hope, and charity. You'll notice that I said it is the happiness experienced by a person who is doing the will of God. It is not something that comes, say, much later. I don't just sit down to a good meal and then 3 hours later, now that was a good meal. I really enjoyed it. You might have that too, but it comes under the form of reminiscence or recollection. This is a correspondence of one-to-one relationship. The exercise of the faculty in its exercise brings satisfaction. Now the types. Spiritual theology distinguishes two kinds of spiritual consolation. There is the ordinary and there is the extraordinary. Ordinary consolation corresponds to the fruits of the Holy Spirit. In fact, the word fruit, which unfortunately conjures up an image of a banana or an apple, has nothing to do with what we commonly call fruits. The word fruit is the Latin for enjoyment. The Latin verb to enjoy is fruire, and fructus is the enjoyment. No doubt we have come to call fruit pears, apples, and such like, because, well, we do enjoy what are called by prior definition things which we enjoy. The fruits of the Holy Spirit are God's supernatural accompaniment to the practice of virtue. It is the pleasure, the satisfaction, the sense of well-being. And there are, as you know, 12. Just to mention them to refresh your memories: charity, joy, peace, patience, benignity, goodness, longanimity, mildness, faith, modesty, continency, and chastity. And those are not exhaustive. They are given to us by St. Paul. They occur in his letter to the Galatians, and by the way, they are balanced by opposites. Those are ordinary consolations. The extraordinary are forms of special grace that God confers either to assist in the performance of arduous tasks. You notice it is the help that God gives so to perform arduous, especially difficult tasks, or that God gives as a reward for the performance of some extraordinarily difficult practices of virtue. You see the divine logic? God never leaves us either unrewarded or unhelped. When he wants us to do difficult things, he provides the means. And the means for our purpose are those special graces that God gives either in anticipation of some extraordinarily difficult task that I have to undertake, or to support the cross I have to undergo, or having undertaken the task or undergoing the cross, it's the reward. In both cases, it's a grace. And theologically, it is either a cooperating grace, technically cooperans, or it is a consequent grace, gratia consequens. There are few things in the spiritual life that are more important, especially when you get into the higher reaches of sanctity, than to recognize that God always provides both the help necessary and the reward, such as he gives, that we have a right to expect. As you would expect, when he confers extraordinary consolations, they not only can be, they are accompanied by extraordinary trials and difficulties. And one of the hardest things in the spiritual life is to be able to distinguish between difficulty, lowercase, and difficulty, capitalized. In other words, God never leaves us unattended. If then he demands a special tasks, things that human nature naturally rebels or reacts against, he will provide by his grace with a certain savor, a certain relish, Well, you might say relish, savor, but Lord, this is hard. Are we making sense? The difficulty is there. The cross is there. The trial is there. And nature knows it's there. But the grace that accompanies the trial, it will do this for our purpose. The joy, the satisfaction, the relish, the peace. That is, the saints tell us to experience even momentarily is worth the fervor, and sometimes they seem to be exaggerating. Years of trial are worth moments of extraordinary consolation from God. What you never do with God, however, is bargain. You never bargain. In other words, God, I'll do this if you get me the consolation. Silly, he will tell you, stop that talk. You're going to take it and do it and leave it to me to give you both the joy that will accompany its doing and the reward, if I want to give it, that follows. So much then for the types. Now for the careful distinctions. We should distinguish spiritual consolation on the one hand from the natural satisfaction that we have been talking about. The word spiritual, for our purposes, is synonymous with supernatural. Natural satisfaction is good, and we have it. But it is great wisdom to be able to distinguish between natural satisfaction and spiritual consolation. Why? Because the one can be present in the absence of the other. Sometimes God will give us both. And oh, those are the days. They are the bright, sunny Mondays when there is both natural satisfaction and spiritual consolation. But you can have, and this is what this is all about, you can have spiritual consolation quite in the absence of natural satisfaction. Natural satisfaction, I repeat, is the built-in, and in that sense, natural effect that takes place when the given faculties are exercised, whether of the body or of the spirit. Spiritual consolation is the effect that follows when the supernatural faculties are exercised. And these are mainly faith, hope, and charity, and their manifold subdivisions. Second, we are to distinguish spiritual consolation from emotional experience. Now, this is a little different from natural satisfaction. Some people have a lot of this. That is, the emotional experience of joy or well-being whenever they do whatever they do. These are the blessed souls that seem never to be sad. The number, I should say, is not large. But nevertheless, to distinguish between the emotional experience of just either pushing a broom or swinging a mop or giving a speech or whatever, that too is good. But do not identify the one with the other. And a third distinction. distinguish between spiritual consolation and temperamental characteristic. There are people who seem never to be out of sorts. Again, I admit I am talking about rare personalities. But we all, depending on the time of day, the sun outside. If Teresa of Avila had to warn her sisters about distinguishing between the feelings you have on a warm, sunny day from spiritual consolation, the rest of us better make sure we distinguish. In other words, the emotional experience is commonly associated with things outside of us. That which comes from a temperamental characteristic is associated with things that come from inside of us. Neither as such is what the church understands by true spiritual consolation. To summarize this, before we go on to the most important part of this, namely how to recognize, distinguish first spiritual consolation from its further counterpart, which the devil tries to somehow simulate, especially with chosen souls. And distinguish spiritual consolation from what we have been talking about, natural satisfaction, emotional experience, or temperamental well-being. Now, the how to recognize true spiritual consolation. I have 10 recommendations. Each of these is associated with a norm. First, true spiritual consolation is not directly associated with the performance of what is naturally pleasing. What's the norm? Sacrifice. If what you do is costly and you get, nevertheless, satisfaction from what you're doing, maybe it is a spiritual or supernatural consolation. Second, a true spiritual consolation is associated with doing God's will, comma, and not my own will, period. What's the norm? The norm is responsiveness to grace. Therefore, a true spiritual consolation is to be recognized when what I do is not what I want to do, but maybe the very opposite of what I want to do. It's God's will. Is it possible to experience joy in not doing my own will? Oh, to learn that is to have graduated from grammar school in the spiritual life. There is joy in not doing my own will. Third, we're talking about recognition. It is something which is not sought. In other words, it is the opposite of selfishness. When I experience joy in being selfless, the odds are God is pleased. Or from another viewpoint, while there's evident joy in selfishness, otherwise so many people wouldn't be selfish, but mysteriously there is a corresponding supernatural joy in being selfless. Number four, you recognize true spiritual consolation when the joy that I experience is not a condition for my fidelity to grace. I don't measure or determine what condition my responsiveness to grace by the satisfaction or the joy I experience. What's the norm? The norm that stands behind true spiritual consolation is love. In other words, there is joy in giving, though obviously most people's joy is obtained from getting. And some people never learn this, never learn that you can have both joy in giving and in getting. Number five, this joy that we've been talking about is not simply part of our character. In other words, the norm in this case of recognizing true spiritual consolation is that it's a gift of God. There are some marvelous changes in the spiritual life that some people experience. People that are bound to be worrisome, the anxious type, and yet through dint of hard effort and constant responsiveness to God's will, they gradually become people that are very cheerful. Not because their character is such as to make them cheerful, but because they find out from experience that responding to graces, they experience joy. Number six, and this is almost the acid test. I have 10 norms here, by the way. I came to the bottom of the page. I had no more space. Number six, true spiritual consolation is that joy which is experienced, where if I don't experience the joy, I am not sad about its absence. We are not being clever in saying that. In other words, true spiritual joy is such that I can go about it and I'm not depressed, and I don't serve God less because, oh gosh, Lord, here it is 2 days and I haven't had the experience that I had before. The norm is trust in God. Number seven, I recognize a true spiritual consolation when that which I do is doing good. And this is a subtle one. Much of the work that we do for God, and the more spiritual and supernatural our labors are, the more hidden are the effects of what good we produce. If I give a talk, I'm not sure it does any good. I write an article in a book. I just hope that somebody profits from it. Teach a class. I come here to Chicago. I just hope, honest, that I'm doing some good. Now, God assures us, as far as God can, that good will be accomplished by the joy which goes into doing what we do. Does that make sense? This spiritual consolation not only is coexistence with suffering and the cross, and sometimes with profound dissatisfaction in our natural faculties, but in the higher reaches of sanctity, it seems almost to be a condition, namely the cross. In other words, that if God, who sees me even in the present in a way that I cannot, I'm sure in the future that none of us can read, God wills to have us to keep going. He wants us to have confidence. The last thing he wants is to discourage us. But as anyone who has tried to do God's will knows, or who had better know, this means following Christ crucified. And let there be no illusions. Otherwise, we're talking about a different religion. It is not Christianity. I don't see the good I am doing. Maybe I never will. God does. You might say, his smile of satisfaction at what I am doing is a sometimes deep spiritual joy that I experience in doing what I honestly believe to be his will, even though I tell him, Lord, do you know how much this is taking out of me? Yes, I know. Number 8. True spiritual consolation, and we can pluralize that, consolations, they are calm and tranquil. What's the norm of a genuine spiritual consolation? Peace. In other words, the absence of that kind of conflict that we associate with the opposite of peace. The ultimates of human existence you don't define. You either experience or the words are meaningless. There is peace. In other words, there is no conscious conflict between my own will and God's. And as far as I can humanly say this, there is no, at least, deliberate conflict between my own will and the will of other people. If I happen to be in conflict with others, it is not because my will is in conflict with theirs, but that theirs is in conflict with God. This is not a trivial observation. In other words, I am at peace. I am at peace with God because my will is not struggling with his, not resisting his will. There is my will as my will in conflict with other people, except you might say accidentally. They happen to be in conflict with the will of God. I want to do God's will, so I'll pray for them. I pity them. I sympathize with their problem. In that indirect sense, I'm in conflict with others, but not because my will wants something which theirs does not, or mine does not want what theirs wants. No. It is because my will wants God's will, and some people, human nature being what it is, do not want God's will. In other words, number 8, the norm of true spiritual consolation is peace.
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.